Good. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode number 48. We're almost at 50 of Forever Strength. I'm Andrew Coates. I've got Bailey Lau here with me. And so I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret. Bailey plans most of this stuff. She's the brains behind all this stuff. So she comes up with the topics, and we talk a lot about program building. And obviously, we have our program Forever Strength. But one of the important things about this too is not everybody necessarily follows along a specific program. A lot of people do their own program building. So let's actually peel back the layers a little bit and showcase some of the things that go into building, you know, effective program for yourself, especially in our case for strength. So Bailey, what you got?
So first off, building your own program is awesome. We're going to show you how to do that if, you know, you just don't like listening to other people or you don't have the funds to sort of pay for anything like that. That being said, I don't program for myself because I know that I'm just going to pick things that I like to do. And a lot of people are like that. So fair warning, like this is going to give you a lot of information, but that usually is the case with a lot of people. So, so first thing, a warm-up. A lot of the times you don't put a warm-up into your workout, which is fine if you don't need anything more than just the first few sets of light for your compound exercises, your first few exercises, then that's fine. But if you wanted to toss in some low intensity cardio just to get the blood flowing, some mobility, if that's necessary for you, foam rolling, again, if it's necessary, you don't have to do stuff like that. So yeah, you can do things like that. It would be good, you know, if you have a certain weakness in terms of mobility to work into that, to allow you to get to that range of motion while you're doing the actual exercises, but it's not necessary. But yeah, if you wanted to build something in like that, I would do low intensity cardio, then mobility, foam rolling, and then your first few sets of the exercises you're doing is really good as well.
Yep. There's a couple important things within this. One, some people really have super crazy long warm-ups and with a lot of mobility stuff. And mobility stuff, like you said, it can be really useful if you need it. If you need to warm up something to gain access to range of motion that you need for a lift, really important. But what we're doing with anything like foam rolling or static stretching, which I think is a bit overrated for warm-ups, is we're temporarily relaxing neural tone of tight muscles. And as we do the warm-up process to loosen them up, that effect is fairly temporary. So if we go and spend 45 minutes of stretching and foam rolling all of our different body parts, by the time we get around to actually lifting, some of those effects have actually worn off. So long warm-ups are kind of a waste of time. So you want to be really strategic and efficient. And one of my favorite things is once you do what's necessary is just pay some attention to the light sets. Don't rush to the heavy stuff. Women are great with this, but man, holy shit. I've literally worked with clients who want to grab the heaviest dumbbells possible on the first set because their egos were controlling everything. And they want to make sure they lifted the heaviest thing possible. And guess what? Their form was crap too. So,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, if your warm-up is longer than 10 minutes even, that's a little excessive. And then you're wondering why your workouts are taking an hour and a half. You probably could take a little bit of time out of your warm-up and be totally fine. So yeah, next thing would be exercise order. So of course you want to start with your compound exercises. So that just means exercises that use multiple joints and require multiple muscle groups. They do require more muscle groups, therefore they require more energy. So you really want to start with those exercises. Because then you have that stored energy in the muscles before, you know, so you can use them. So that would be things like squats, deadlifts, hinges, like RDLs, bench press, chin up, row, and any sort of variation of those exercises. And then the next thing, so I would say maybe two to three. Three might be a little much for compounds, but it depends on your goals and how you're recovering and how close you're getting to failure. It depends on how close you're getting to failure, how many compound exercises that you do. So two to three, two would probably be really good. And then you want to move into isolation exercises. So that would be single joint, single muscle movements. So things like tricep extensions, knee extensions, stuff like that. And so those don't require as much energy from the whole body because it's only one muscle group being used. And usually two to four exercises, it depends on, you know, if you're doing upper body, lower body, things like that. And then there's those sort of things that people don't think are compound movements, and they are, like lunges, any sort of lunge variation. They don't think of it as a compound because everyone says, oh yeah, squats, deadlifts, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you are technically using multiple joints. You're using the knee joint and you're using the hip joint, the ankle joint as well. Bulgarian split squats is another one, still considered a compound, but a lot of people don't consider it that way because they can't load it like they can load their squat.
And this is a good thing to think about. You don't have to do the big bilateral squat, bilateral meaning like both limbs at the same time first, and then the single leg stuff second. Sometimes that can be really smart, especially if, you know, your joints feel a bit beaten up. Sometimes it's really smart to actually push the single leg stuff or the single arm stuff. And then you're already going to be somewhat fatigued. Then you can move over to the bilateral stuff. So that's wise. Another component is the level of skill required for the exercise. You're probably going to want to put the higher skill exercises early. So what we didn't mention here, because these are more strength programs, we're not necessarily talking about like Olympic lifting or power or explosiveness, but there is definitely some value, especially as we get older, in retaining power and explosiveness. And so those exercises on average, we're going to want to have maybe just a couple sets. It might be something as simple as like a medicine ball throw against a wall, but especially for things like if you're doing anything like, say, dumbbell snatches, that's probably a really good example. You're probably going low rep. It's high skill. It probably wants to come really early in the workout. And then towards the end of the workout, we can put in often the conditioning stuff. But something like pushing a sled or a farmer's carry, I would call those quite low skill. They're hard to screw up. So therefore, they tend to come later, especially if there's a conditioning component.
Yeah, because if you think about it, near the end of your workout, sometimes even you're just fatigued physically, but also mentally. So if you put something that's very technical, like a snatch, at the end of your workout, it's probably not going to go so well. the next thing to take into consideration is whether it's a leg day, an upper body day, or a full body day. And what we're talking about is the amount of exercises, the number of exercises that are in your workout. For a leg day, I would say somewhere between 4 to 6 exercises per leg day. Anything more than 6, unless you're doing a lot of isolation stuff, even then, would be quite challenging to recover from. So leg day, obviously, that includes glutes, hamstrings, quads, and calves. Upper body day would be push, pull, that's horizontal and vertical. And then you're thinking about grips as well. I would say, again, depending on how many compounds, how many isolation exercises you're doing, 6 plus exercises, 6 to maybe 9, depending on what you're doing. I love to put supersets in upper body, which is a time saver, but it also, you're supposed to do a push and then a pull, or, you know, things that are, what word am I looking for? Agonist antagonist muscle groups. So biceps and then triceps. So something like that wouldn't require much for rest. And then you can get more stuff in. And then, I mean, technically you're doing more exercises, but you can still recover.
And I find that, especially when we're dealing with women, women seem to, on average, recover faster than men do when it comes to training. And there are different, I don't want to get into the science behind it, but it seems to hold true in practice. I often find that the women I've trained over the years can handle volumes and pace and intensity that would cripple most men. So women often do really well with supersetting, especially the upper body stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then I guess we'll move into frequency / splits. So frequency, it would be most beneficial for a person to train a muscle group at least twice per week. And we'll talk about volume after this. But so if you're doing 3 days per week, our suggestion would be to do full body days, just because then you're hitting those muscle groups at least twice per week. Anything 4 days or more would be an upper lower split. That allows you to rest and still go to the gym. So you don't have to take a full day off. While your legs may be sore and you're resting them, you can do an upper body day. And then 5 to 6, which you can also do an upper lower split if you can recover from something like that. But another option would be a push-pull legs day. So 2 upper bodies and then a lower body.
And you don't need to have all of your workouts perfectly self-contained within a week. A week is arbitrary. Like if you think about classic body part splitting, the bodybuilders, we have a chest day, the back day, the arms day, the shoulder day, the legs day, right? That's the old school stuff. Mm-hmm. And if someone's primary goal is muscle building, and I find guys like this one more than women, guys just love this style, and you're really good at getting your five workouts a week, it's fine. That actually is a fine split. But if you're variable in terms of how many, and I find if I've got someone who is usually pretty good at getting a minimum of three workouts a week, but sometimes upwards of six, and it varies a lot, I personally like push-pull leg splits because you just simply rotate through the days. It's not like you have to have one of each or two of each per week. Just do the next one in the rotation. And upper-lower tends to work well that way too. Again, the next one in the rotation. And that's, and even full body, like they all actually work pretty well that way. I would just recommend against most people try to split it up into individualized body parts.
Yeah. Hence why I didn't bring that one up because again, you're not hitting those muscle groups twice per week. If you're only doing chest once per week, mm-hmm. I mean, technically you could be using it if you're doing a compound move, but trying to target the triceps or the shoulders or something, you could be doing that, but it's just, for strength specifically, it's not ideal.
Agreed.
In my opinion.
So she sometimes puts people in check in a very polite way too. So she's the boss, guys. She's the boss.
So volume, like I mentioned before, is measured by the amount of sets that you're doing within a week or within a day. Studies have shown that 10 to 15 sets per muscle group per week is most beneficial for strength, and of course a little bit of hypertrophy as well. But that could be really challenging to fit into one day and still get enough intensity that your muscles are going to be able to grow and recover, right? So this is for an example, if you're looking at the amount of volume that you're doing for your quads that week, 1 to 2 exercises twice per week can be 4 sets of the exercise is 12 to 16. So it does add up pretty quickly. If you're doing sets of 3, then that's awesome too. But yeah, that just seems to be ideal.
And this is probably important for you guys to understand. So when we say increased frequency, it's all the purpose of the increased frequency is almost entirely to be able to do the effective training volume. There was some research several years ago that seemed to point to increased frequency having its own benefit. But once it was equated for volume, really the benefit was from the added volume, because as Bailey said, there's going to be limits to just simply how much you could do in one day and actually recover from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then second last thing, I guess, would be intensity. And so for your compounds, and we always talk in reps and reserve, and that's what we do with our Forever Strength program as well. It's just a way to measure the intensity that you're working at, how challenging an exercise is. So for compounds, it depends what you're doing that week, but usually between a 2 to 3 reps in reserve, 4 even. Some days you might want to do 0 or 1, that's up to you, but doing that every week is not going to be easy to recover from. And it's a lot of mental work as well to get that close to failure with one of your compounds. And for isolation work, between 0 to 3 reps in reserve, just because most isolation exercises are pretty easy to fail and safe to fail. You know, if you fail on a knee extension, the machine just doesn't, you just don't push it up all the way. And same with a bicep curl, tricep pushdown, stuff like that. Whereas a squat, if you fail a squat, it's a little bit less safe, especially if you don't understand how to fail a squat in a specific rack, whatever you're using. But yeah.
As in like a bodybuilder-ish type personality who's been in the gym for over 20 years, it's been a while since I failed on a compound lift, but I've gotten stuck under a barbell on a bench press, and I've definitely gotten stuck under a bar on a heavy squat before. And guess what? That shit can get risky, and it's definitely not fun. So yeah, that's why we don't take you guys to 0 reps in reserve on big barbell compounds like that.
Yeah. When there's a trainer with you, it's kind of different. Like if you really want to see where you're at and someone is there to spot you, that knows how to spot properly, then that's one thing. But yeah, to do online programming or being programming for yourself, could be a little bit risky. And then the last thing, I guess, is duration. So ideally, you would be able to stick to your program for 2 to 4 months. I know a lot of people get really bored with exercise, but we've talked about this on a podcast before. You need to be practicing the same things consistently to be able to know if you need to add weight, to know where you were at, and to create that connection between the brain and the muscle to create that skill. And then once that skill is there, being able to add weight to the exercise and challenge the muscles.
You'll often see programs sold, and there are friends of mine who I think are really smart who do 4-week programs and 4-week challenges. And often, I mean, there can be some benefit to that. It can keep things interesting. We prefer, I mean, our programs essentially are 13 weeks because we prefer to give people a little bit more of a t experience and time to, as you said, learn those skills, see the benefits, develop the consistency of it. And phase to phase of our program, we don't necessarily totally overhaul every new thing. It's not like we shift from CrossFit to powerlifting between phases. We just make some subtle tweaks. We may have a slightly different theme, rebalance the volume and the priority of stuff. Over the long run, the clients that I've trained the longest, the clients that Bailey's trained the longest, my own personal programming, long-term success, it's actually based in a fairly consistent program. And it's just subtle tweaking as you go. And Bailey's right. Keeping things interesting for people. If you're someone who finds that things get really mentally or physically stale and it contributes to you not being consistent, it's really okay to change your programming. We think that if you're really randomizing your programming like monthly or too frequently, you're probably not going to be spending enough time on the skill development or creating a compounding effect of the training to actually see appreciable strength and muscle growth.
Yeah. And for that skill that we talked about, even if you do get bored and things get stale, keeping your compounds the same and switching up your isolation work because it requires less skill would also be another option. So then you're still changing things up a little bit, but you are keeping those compounds consistent so that you can get better at them. Because changing your bicep curl from a dumbbell to a cable, it's going to feel different. It's going to have a slightly different outcome, but it's the same exercise, and it just, you get that, oh, this is new, right? So if you need that, then that's another option as well.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys, again for tuning in. The next couple of weeks, if everything goes according to plan, we should have a couple of really incredible guests for you guys. So thanks for continuing to tune in. Please, if there's someone in your world who is new to strength training or is hungry to learn, just likes learning this stuff, share it with that one person, right? Send it in a DM. That little extra effort goes a really long way. And if you have any questions for us, of course, you can get a hold of us both on social media. So at Bailey Lau, LAUFIT Fit, Bailey at Bailey Lau Fit, and I'm at Andrew Coates Fitness. So shoot us a message and we'd love to hear from you guys. And if you're enjoying this podcast and if you've been tuning in every week, we want to hear from you guys too. So thank you so much. And we will see you in the next episode.